You know that I really look forward to my visit home every year. There's something that I do not look forward to, though. I come from a very traditional place down in the south of India. And it's really not cool to have a priest with a ponytail. And when I go there, I'm like on vacation, so you know, when I have to go to the grocery store or wherever I have to go, I just wear my jeans, wear my flip-flops, and I'm gone. And as people will tell me, they really don't like a jeans-clad, ponytailed, hippie priest from America. Sometimes the expectation is a little too much. Priests in India don't just wear the collar, they wear the cassock. So even when guests come home, what do they expect me to be? Wearing my cassock, perhaps on my knees, raise my hand up, constantly praying. I don't have to eat or sleep or drink, or that's all I do, right? So it's sometimes discomforting to know that this is the kind of almost a negativity that you experience. In fact, I don't even look at people because I know they're looking at my hair. Yet, at the same time, if I had to raise social issues like the dowry system or the caste system, and if I have to challenge the society on this, they tell me, you're a priest, stay out of that. That's not your business. You do God's work, that's all you need to do. You know, don't tell us what to do. So sometimes I understand what Jesus went through back in his hometown, because I know the most difficult place for me to be a priest is back home. This time though, last couple of weeks back when I went home, I decided to change the attitude. And this is what I did. Instead of focusing on people's negativity towards me, I decided to focus on my capacity to deal with criticism. I decided to focus on my capacity to understand my people. In fact, as today's gospel leads us, I began to focus on my capacity to love. Today's second reading that we have from the letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians really makes me think about how Jesus dealt with attitudes. How did Jesus deal with negativity? How did Jesus deal with criticism? How do we deal with negativity? What is our capacity for love? St. Paul presents almost as it were an ideal. Not almost as it were, it is an ideal for love. So, and the reason why I call it an ideal is because I don't think it's possible humanly to kind of achieve the perfection in love that Christ accomplished, but that we can get as close as we can. So just to understand what the ideal is, just to understand Christ's capacity for love, I'm going to just do a little exercise with you over here. I want you, and I think people here would find it difficult, but I want those of you who can to focus your eyes totally on the crucifix, if you can. And while I read this, don't look at me. Look at the crucifix, okay? Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. Love is not pompous. Love is not inflated. Love is not rude. Love does not seek its own interests. It is not quick-tempered. It does not brood over injury. It does not rejoice over wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Now, as you look at the crucifix and you hear those words, not a single phrase of that is untrue, isn't it? There's no single place where you look at the cross and say, oh, that's not true about Christ, or that's not true about the crucifix. That is what I mean by the ideal Christ presents for us. In other words, Christ's capacity for love is supreme. Christ is love par excellence. Christ's capacity for love is perfect. Now, having understood that, here are my three practical implications that I want to throw out for you to reflect on. My first point, and take this home, this is homework for you actually. Go back home and reread this passage. Especially those of your spouses, husbands and wife, sit together and read this. Except, this time instead of the word love, put your name there. So if I was reading it, I would read it as Satish is patient, Satish is kind, Satish is not jealous, and so on. By the time I end up reading that, I can't help laughing. I would end up with Satish bears all things, Satish believes all things, Satish hopes all things, Satish endures all things, Satish never fails. And why am I asking that we do this? Simply because when we do that, we will understand how close or far away we are from the ideal that Christ presents to us. Sometimes just this scripture passage can become a whole spiritual exercise for us. Yes, to each day strive towards the kind of love that Christ has put before us. That itself is a spiritual exercise. So try it at home. I think it'll be fabulous. My second point. I said earlier that this passage is about our capacity to love. So when I look at my own life, though, I see that my capacity to love depends on who I'm talking about. So for my parents and for my family, my capacity to love is unlimited. Honestly, I think I could die for them. But when I think about people I do not like, my capacity to love is very limited. We present Christ as the ideal. We present Christ as the greatest perfection of love, not because he loved only the ones he liked. He's known as the supreme teacher of love. He's known as perfection. He's God who is love because he is able to love those who did harm to him. So that is the real test, isn't it? Most of us think of ourselves as very loving people, and indeed we are. But perhaps further away from the ideal that Christ presents to us. So this is very challenging. So it'll be a good test for us to ask ourselves, what is my capacity to love those I do not like? That is the true test of our striving towards love. My third point, St. Paul, towards the end, talks about how when I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. But now, he says, I'm a man. I must think like a mature man. Why does St. Paul say that? Because I think what St. Paul is really trying to say is that the capacity to love like Christ loved is really a test of Christian maturity. Sometimes we grow up, but in our Christian life, and especially in our capacity to love, we are very much like little children. And St. Paul is saying, grow up in your Christian maturity. Increase in your Christian maturity. And what's the test? The test is that I stop thinking like a child when it comes to love, but I'm able to love like Christ loved. That is the test of Christian maturity. I want to put it differently for us in this parish, because we've been talking about radical discipleship. Our whole theme has been radical discipleship. It means to think like Christ, to act like Christ, to talk like Christ. And that's what this passage is all about, isn't it? To love like Christ, to talk, to think, to act like Christ. So what a great ideal we have today. Let me conclude today's homily by merely saying this. I said that the crucifix is the sign of Christ's perfect love, but that's not the only one. Every Eucharist tells us of Christ's unfailing capacity to love. Because here, once again today, bread and wine, the body and blood of Christ, given to us in unconditional, unfailing, perfect love. This baby today, Logan William, he's not just baptized into the church. This kid, this child, is going to receive the unfailing, the perfect love of God, even as a little baby. What a beautiful mystery we celebrate. So as we say yes to Christ in communion today, don't just think of it as host, bread and wine. Think of it as holding the holiness, the perfection of the love of Christ. It's something holy, holy to its perfection. We hold that, take it into our hearts, and in this world, which is so divided, so violent, in this world where there's so much misunderstanding and broken relationship, let's take the perfect love of Christ to the world. Let's tell people that God's capacity to love is unfailing. And only you and I can do that. If you agree, let the people of God say,